like to make a motion on to that? Okay. Good evening, everybody. Catherine is not here tonight. She's on a business trip. And so I will be chairing the meeting. I'd like to welcome you all. Wish you all a happy holiday season. I think we have a quorum. So, do we need to do a roll call? Joy?
I don't think so.
Okay. You'll note who's here?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Would anybody like to make a motion to approve the agenda? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Great. Okay. Anybody opposed? No. Well, we have a speaker tonight, and I'd like to welcome Eric Christensen, who's the chief of the Internal Compliance Division at WMATA. Eric has been in his job for about a year and joined WMATA in early 2016. His job is to implement the CEO's internal management function, which provides quality assurance and compliance assessments to ensure that the departments are fulfilling business objectives, addressing corrective action, and complying with the National Transportation Safety Board and Federal Transit Administration and other agencies' requirements and recommendations. During its first year, the INCP conducted more than 30 internal assessments throughout WMATA. These assessments and corrective action plans are posted on the WMATA website. Prior to joining WMATA, Eric served as special assistant to the CEO at the Baltimore-Washington International Airport. And prior to that, he was deputy administrator for finance and administration for the Maryland Department of Transportation. So he comes to WMATA with a great deal of experience. And I think we were, the function of his department was brought to my attention. I don't know if everybody else did, but my attention, when I saw a report, an article in the Washington Post on station managers. And I think prior to that, I'm not even sure if I really knew your department existed, for better or for worse. So with that introduction, I'd like to give Eric the floor.
Thank you very much. I'm just going to quickly go through the presentation if you have any questions.
So I have... You can interrupt with any questions. That's fine. No problem whatsoever. So, Joy, if we can go to the first. It's up on the screen. So the department was created back in late in 2016 as a direct report to the general manager. The assurance and compliance functions at WMATA previously were scattered throughout the organization. Many times they reported to the departments that they were supposed to oversee. So you had at least the potential for conflict of interest there. Sort of in a big overview, what our role is to promote compliance with all laws, regulations, and policies, help implement corrective action plans, and I'll talk a little bit more about that, really drive improvement change throughout the organization, and proactively go out and identify issues and fix them, as opposed to what was happening before is the FTA would come in do their review. I really don't care who gets credit for it, whether it's us, whether it's OIG, whether it's, you know, the feds. I want to identify the problems, let's fix them, and then move on. But one of the things that we're trying to do is get out in front of some of these issues. Next page. So we have internal compliance really has two major functions. On the left-hand side is a group quality assurance internal compliance and oversight, otherwise known as QECO. And their areas of focus is in transit operations is maintenance, operations, engineering, capital program, safety and security. And then on the right is MARC, which is the Management Audit Risks and Compliance, which is deals with the CFO and our internal business processes like IT, procurement, and so forth. That's more of a... comparable to like an internal audit function at a large corporation. we're a little unique in that we have an OIG, so a lot of our activities, we coordinate with them. We develop annual work plans. We sit down to make sure that we don't duplicate. Like for this year, the OIG was doing a lot of audits of our IT department, so we chose not to do IT reviews. So trying to work through those types of issues. Next page. So we essentially have four major core services that we're attempting to drive change, systemic changes throughout the organization. First one is policy and strategy. We've taken over the rewrite and update of all policies and procedures, some of which that were non-existent, some of them are 10 years old, some of them are just, you know, outdated. So that is a big function for the group. We've established a corporate quality management system. That was approved and submitted to the FDA earlier this year. And over the next couple of years, we're going to be developing quality management systems for each one of the departments, not only in operations, but throughout. How can we drive quality throughout whatever we do? And then a risk management strategy. We tend to make decisions without fully considering what the risk is associated with them. Again, this is much more from my side of the world where I spent most of my time in the public sector. This is a concept that we don't generally deal with. It's really a private sector concept. We're trying to drive that. We're in the early stages, but making sure that as we're making executive level decisions that we're fully considering the potential exposures out there. Next one is assurance, and this is where a lot of our efforts are. It's sort of we do risk-based internal reviews, and I'll go through some of them in a little bit more detail later on. And then we identify issues. We work with the departments to develop corrective action plans, which essentially says, okay, how we're going to fix it, who's responsible, what's the timeline associated with that. We work with them. And then once they say, okay, we've done all of these, then we go back in and validate that it's actually been implemented, and then what we'll do is periodically over the next, you know, couple of years, go back and make sure that it's actually staying fully implemented there. Then we have certain priority critical programs that we're doing that we do on a regular basis, 7-car rail cars. We're doing all the quality assurance functions associated with that. Revenue vehicles, reliability improvement campaigns, making sure that proper planning, that we have the tools in place, that the staff is trained, that they're actually, you know, following policies and procedures so that when we fix that vehicle, whether it's HVAC or it's doors or it's, you know, steering or whatever the case may be, that we have a reasonable assurance that it was done properly and will continue to be fine. And then a big issue for us is employee absenteeism, union management, so forth. This campaign's been going on now for about, we have a new employee absenteeism program that was adopted about 9 months ago. So what we're seeing since that point in time is about a 16% reduction in employee absenteeism over time. Lots going on in that area. Then we have the compliance, sort of the safety compliance, which is essentially coordinating with the National Transportation Safety Board, with the Federal Transit Administration, and other generally federal organizations on fixing safety-related items. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. That is a significant part of what we do on a daily basis. And then finally, we refer to it oversight, but it's really management assistance. We go out and help departments improve their processes, their efficiencies, so that's sort of the last function. If there's no any questions on that, I'll go to the next one. Right now we have approximately 570 corrective action plans that we've agreed to and we're working for throughout the organization. On the left-hand side is safety-related FTA and National Transportation Safety Board. On the right, typically, are FTA and other, the Inspector General and maybe General Accounting Office, more of a financial compliance office. Of those, and those caps go back, some of them 2 to 3 years, the total. We have 40, a little bit more than 40% of closed and have been approved by our external stakeholders. Another third that we're actively working with them, where we've submitted documentation, they're reviewing them, they may have some questions, they may ask some revisions. And then we've got approximately 25% that we are working internally to correct. The one thing I did want to mention is, and I'll talk a little bit about this a little later, all of this is information you can find on our webpage. So that status is updated on a monthly basis. Some of the other stuff is like the actual caps for FTA and STSB are updated on a weekly basis because we are making submissions back and forth to the FTA on a weekly basis. Yes, ma'am. No, under review means we've submitted it to the external stakeholder. They're either reviewing it or they've sent it back to us and said, okay, you know, you got 7 of these items correct. We need you to revise these 2 or 3. So it's still work in progress. In development means we're working on it in-house. It hasn't been submitted for initial or final review to our external stakeholders. Did you have a question, sir?
For those who are those of us who are unfamiliar with these corrective action plans, could you give us maybe a couple examples of what types of corrective action plans you've worked on in the past? What the scope is of these?
Oh, they can be all over the place. So on the safety side, are supervisors adequately trained on suspicious activities, drug and alcohol abuse? Does our policy for roadway protection, in other words, safety going out, is it clearly defined in such a way that an employee understands what their responsibilities would be? On the financial side of things, it could be, do you have a grant management policy in place to request federal funding? So it's the gamut of all kinds of things. All right. Sure.
Out of, I guess, between WMATA and the other two agencies, where would you say would be the place where the majority of the corrective actions are coming from?
Clearly the FTA.
Okay.
Yeah. NTSB is relatively significant issues, but relatively few. FTA, a lot. And then so that would be the safety side. On the financial management side, I think it's fair to say that we had significant financial problems 3 or 4 years ago. And when I say that, I don't mean from a cash perspective, but internal controls, procurement related. And so I don't know if you were aware, but essentially most transit agencies, once you pay your bill, you submit to the FTA and say, I want my reimbursement. That's how it's all electronically done. We were, for a 3-year period, have to send manually the documentation to the FTA. They had to review it before they would send us the cash. We just got them to say, okay, your internal controls have reached a level that we have confidence that when you submit information, it is reasonably accurate. So for us, that was a huge deal. So the FTA really is what's driving us. We do have a smaller subset from the Inspector General as well. But FTA is really what's driving us right now. In the future, you'll see, maybe recall or don't recall, there has to be a state oversight committee for WMATA. That was not functioning at all, so the FTA stepped in. All three jurisdictions have now passed legislation and we're in the process of creating that new oversight. So what you'll see is in the future, more of the those safety recommendations coming from that group than the FDA. Okay. So then on the next page, so we developed. My background is, I had auditors who reported to me. So we always did an annual work plan as the audit work plan. So one of the benefits that I thought I brought to this function was we established, okay, what are our priorities for this year? Make sure that the senior managers and the GM were on board with that. So initially when we started this, we had 18 on the left side and 10 on the right side. So as the year went on, we added three additional ones on the left and the right. So essentially we have 32 assessments. All of the ones on the left side are complete. They're in the process. The reports, corrective action plans have been approved and are in the process of being implemented. You will see on Monday a number of additional reports will be posted to our webpage. We're actively working on finalizing the last few reports for posting. On the right is typically more of an internal audit function. A number of those will probably be posted this year. Some of them we're still having some internal debate what's going to be posted. So just as an example, on the right-hand side, number 7 is cash collection and processing. We're probably going to have a very general discussion on that because we don't want folks to know how we process our cash. So this was the first year for us doing this. We learned a lot both internally, and I think we've made some significant strides in improving safety, reliability, and so forth. But we also learned how to do assessments. We're in the process of developing work plans for calendar year 2018. We'll have fewer assessments we're going to do because what we want to do is we went back and did sort of a risk-based analysis of them after the fact and said, okay, which ones are the most concerning to us from either a safety perspective or a service delivery perspective. Rather than doing additional assessments, we're going to go back and do a lot of validations of work that's been previously committed. So I think you'll see next year, we're probably, rather than 32, we're probably going to be somewhere in the 20 to 25. I've reviewed it. We're going to pass it out to senior staff, and it'll be available, and we'll be on our webpage early next year. But again, we're going to be focusing on safety, service delivery, and a few capital projects, some areas where we think that there's some real potential benefits to improving service here. Just in my mind, rightfully or wrongfully, if you look at this on the left-hand side, engineering, maintenance, there's 12 of those. That's really, the majority of that is really safety-related stuff. We need to make sure that we are safe and reliable because we're safe. At the end of the day, everything has to come down to safety. So that's why you see the majority of our efforts this first year were on the safety side. Then we did service delivery mainly on the rail side. You'll see a little next year on the bus side. And then we're doing 4 on the capital program. And then we did 11 on the sort of the more internal audit function. As the year came wound down and we're not putting these in, we're spending a lot more time doing management assistance area with that group of folks. We've got some functions that aren't performing at the level that the GM would like us to do. So we're doing a lot of go in, identify what the problems are, and they're not as full blown as some of our other assessments. Next page. So what I hopefully are going to try to articulate here is what does this mean for the customer? At the end of the day, obviously, if we're safe, there's a huge impact for the customer. But I wanted to try and give you sort of a selected view of some of the areas that we're working in and what have we've already accomplished. So the first is sort of how train operator and station operator perspective, have we outlined what the expectations are for those folks? When there are problems, are we tracking to make sure that they're resolved? How do we turn those individual failures to make sure that we improve the day-to-day service? So it's really that type of sort of using this. From my background, is if you make incremental small improvements, at some point the customer's really going to notice. And you know there are thousands and thousands of interface with the customer. You can't solve all of them all one time. So we spend a lot of time on those things that directly impact the customer on a day-to-day basis. Another area was San Francisco got sued for ADA problems on their rail system. So we proactively went out and decided, okay, how bad is the WMATA system in terms of ADA requirements? Surprisingly, two things came out. We took a third of the stations and we identified, prioritized what those third we would take a look at. Number of ridership, number of, some of it would be located near organizations that advocate or have a large population of folks with special needs. So we went through and did an analysis. And one area that we did find that we were not very good at was area of refugee. So we went up, is it clearly designated if we have a problem? Do the station managers know where it is? We found out that, frankly, some of the station managers didn't know. So we're now going back and retraining them in those types of areas. We thought that we generally found that we didn't have problems. What I did not realize is we actually have, as part of our mobility group, anytime that they have a complaint that is a ADA-related issue, they track, they work with the folks. We actually had a process in place to identify problems and to deal with them pretty darn good. So we didn't find that we had problems. But we've made a determination that we're going to do another third of the stations next year and then do finally another third in an effort to identify opportunities for improvement. The other point I want to make here is that when we're out there doing surveys for ADA, if my folks find out that, okay, the PIT system isn't working, well, they immediately then send a note to systems maintenance to say, you have PITs down in here. So it's another way to actually get people into, supervisors into the system to identify problems. And so in my mind, that's a good thing. It's a sub-benefit of what we're trying to do. We did this year an assessment of escalator maintenance practices. Generally speaking, not bad. The thing that drives me is we do maintenance right in the middle of peak periods, which to me is just the stupidest thing. So we are trying to shift away from that. I don't know if any of you, unfortunately, have had the opportunity to take the shuttle service from Fort Totten to Silver Spring or backwards. So I happened to yesterday, unfortunately, later than I would have liked to. Shuttle service was okay, whatnot. Come back to Fort Totten, and they're working on the damn escalators. And it was a PM, and I'm like, come on, guys. That's something that you could have delayed 4 or 5 days, still been in your period, and not impacted the customer. So those types of things to try and think about from a customer perspective. This is my opinion. I'm sure Joy's going to smack me for saying this. The focus tends to be on getting the service out, as opposed to, which is important, don't get me wrong, but what is the customer's experience? That has to be the key. My last few years at BWI, we had two other airports that we were competing against. So customer service was a huge deal. So that's what we're trying to get the operations folks to do, is to rethink how they do their things. It's not only about getting service out, but trying to improve the customer experience. Yes, sir.
Well, it doesn't bother me so much because I run marathons, so it doesn't bother me. But one of the things I hear is a lot of people will complain, and I have seen it, is that when there is an escalator outage, the direction of the flow of the escalator for people that might be, impacted, that may have a disability, could, they may have only two escalators or three escalators, but they don't have, if you might say, the proper direction flow for someone that might have more of a challenge. So, instead of having them climb up, and the others are riding down freely. So we're trying to figure out where.
Yeah, so the policy is when that occurs, the station manager and or elevator escalator is supposed to change the direction. We should not be asking folks to be walking up the stairs. If you have two escalators, you'd have one go down, you shut that off and the people can walk, and the other one's going up. We found that occasionally there's a problem, like, again, personal experience. What drives me crazy is Judiciary Square right here. Once a week, the down escalator is down. And the problem, I hate to say this, we're amongst friends, so. It's out of the line of sight of the station manager, so he's not calling it in, and unfortunately, this is one of the stations that doesn't have centralized monitoring of the escalator. So we are, one, ultimately trying to get to a centralized so that it goes back to a control center that immediately can identify it and do that, but then also harp on the station managers that part of your job is to get out of the kiosk and walk around. And one of them for that station is every once in a while just peer to make sure that the escalators are working until we have a long-term solution. So I'm with you there. Okay? Yes, ma'am. Okay, so that's okay. Okay. So initially, we only had a few hours of service on the evenings to do. So unfortunately, we had a proposal which was approved, which essentially says we're going to close earlier to try for the normal day-to-day maintenance, preventive maintenance stuff to give us. I think it was another 12 to 15 hours of maintenance time on the system. I think it's fair to say, I'm not divulging any secrets here, the system is not in the best of shape. And so I envision it to, let's say Pennsylvania. Maryland generally has pretty good roads. Pennsylvania highways suck. So they're always under construction. We are catching up. SafeTrack did the most critical items that were absolutely had to do for safety related. Well, what we're now doing is we're catching up to make sure that we get the system to a state of good repair. And unfortunately, there's no other time to do that. If you take the service on the weekends, it is brutal down here, unfortunately. Yes. So we are looking. So one of the things that we did not do very well is piggyback. So when I say piggyback, so we have the Fort Totten, the Silver Spring, to do some very critically needed track work. I heard so far we've replaced 2,500 ties, and there's a critical turnout there that allows trains to go from track to track. Had to be done. Well, in the past, that's all we would do. Well, we've got Tacoma shut down, so let's go in and do what we can there. We've then piggybacked on to other things. So rather than shutting down multiple times, what we're trying is when we do shut down, how can we maximize that availability? To try and teach staff that track rights or the ability to get on the track for maintenance purposes is a valuable commodity and resource that we need to use. So we're going to, you know, we're in the process of taking a look at, you know, some, we're going to be impacted by the Purple Line. Okay, so we're not quite fully sure what that's going to be, but there's probably going to be some stations shut down. Well, if we're shutting down for Purple Line because they're going to go into New Carrollton or Bethesda, we're going to make sure that we're ready to go for other things in there, because what we have to be able to do is articulate to the customers, we understand it is an inconvenience and we apologize, but we're going to do it once rather than multiple times. Try to think much more strategic in that way. So unfortunately, we have a backlog of improvements to do. What I would say to your boss is we really are trying to be much more efficient and effective, and we really do understand the burden that we place on these outages, and that therefore we want to make them as absolutely critical as possible. I think we've done a little bit better job of articulating when those are. We talked today, so essentially significant outages for the next year, we publicize, and you know about it. Well, you know, again, the highway model, if they're going to do a major highway project, many times they tell the public 2 and 3 years out. So we're going to try and expand that. Rather than just do 1 year, do a 2 year. Because we got the 60, you know, Interstate 66 in Virginia that's going to impact us. We've got the Purple Line. So there's some opportunities to start articulating that, give folks the opportunity to think about that. Plus, I also think that we need to be a little bit more strategic in how we deal with the outages. You know, my thinking on this last one was okay, but I have to tell you, I came back and I had a page worth of, okay, we need to change this. And some of it's as simple as, for a whole host of reasons, we had to outsource the shuttle service on the weekdays. Generally speaking, it's okay. The guys are doing fine. They're nice buses. But, you know, loading and unloading is incredibly slow because you only have one exit. The rows are relatively small. We didn't think through that as well as we probably should have. They have signage that tells you the direction. Well, we weren't telling them to switch. So, you know, I was at Silver Spring, and it says, I'm going to Silver Spring. And we had these two individuals who were not native English speakers get onto it and didn't realize that that was the wrong place. And so we had to explain to them, find someone to communicate, explain to them, no, they needed the bus that went to Tacoma. That slowed up the process. Again, that doesn't sound like a lot, but if you can make those incremental improvements, customers are smart enough to realize that you're doing things better. So that's where we're trying to get to. Yes, sir.
I'm interested in the studies that you did ADA-wise concerning what you saw and when you saw them with the Accessibility Advisory Committee meeting. I think it would be interesting to go, I don't know if the ADA program office was notified, or the Office of Access Services, Christian Kent. Were the results fed to either one of those offices?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry, we may have talked about that before you came in. Mm-hmm. And our report, I believe, is going to come out, be publicized on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So when we did the survey, we identified a bunch of issues. Unbeknownst to me and to some of my staff, there's a process in place that whenever an ADA issue is identified, it goes to an individual in Kent's office,
okay,
who then immediately works with the department. It's not high tech. It's a spreadsheet, but they track it. They were closing things, you know, closing them in a relatively 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
90% of them were closed. So that process really worked very well. We did a survey of a third of the stations this year. We're going to do the next third, another third in 18, and then we'll do a final third in 2019.
Okay.
To identify specific issues that may be at the stations, goes from a So there's some things like, and it wasn't just the stations, we took it outside. So you're on a bus, you get off the bus, we have great ADA access in the station, but the sidewalk is all busted up. Mm-hmm. Well, that doesn't do you any good. So we tried to, again, take it from the customer perspective. Mm-hmm. So you'll see in our report some suggestions on improvements. But a lot of those more individual finite stuff, immediately when we saw them, they were fed in and either have been repaired or are in the process.
Interesting thing would be, particularly if the work was done quickly, and I don't know that it was ever discussed at the committee that I chaired. It would be interesting to be able to note that, because if it's been identified, handled, and fixed, those are the kinds of report. Those are the kinds of items that should go into a board report, so that the people who did it get credit. Because certainly, when you don't do things, we certainly talk about those. But I would, I'd like to be able to track that, because I think that's important. And then also accessibility committee, advisory committee, I mean, they see things all the time. So it'd be kind of interesting to see how we compared with some of the stuff that came through with your group. Yeah.
Okay, I will follow up with Christian tomorrow.
Great. That'd be wonderful. Yeah. Good.
Eric, I just have one.
Sure.
How much do you want to finish your report?
This page, unless you had extra questions, I'm pretty well done.
Can we let him finish his report and then open it up for questions?
Yeah, I only have two other slides that are relatively quick. So of our assessments, there's 54 corrective action plans that were identified for those 32 reports. Four of them are already finalized and done. We're in the process of working on those 50. Again, those are posted on the web page. We have it set up. So this is the action that's required. This is the individual. This is the group that's required, and a due date, and we track towards that. And in full disclosure, probably early on, some of the first few assessments, we were a little too aggressive in when we were going to have CAPS closed. So we are a little behind on a few of them, but for the most part, we're on schedule. So, and then the final one is sort of the transparency and accountability. All of our internal reviews are going to be posted on the webpage. Several that are there today. We have another batch going on Monday, and we'll have all completed ones by the end of the year. While we did 31 assessments, I think we're probably only going to have 25 completed and posted. Couple of them, especially on the internal compliance side, or the internal audit function, are probably going to spill into January or February. Also, we have corrective action plans, incredibly detailed. Okay, here's the 16 different steps that need to be done. These are the people who are responsible for it and the timelines, and it's sequential. And every one of those corrective action plans says, okay, we do that, and then my folks go back and validate that it's actually been done. And then what we're going to do is, based on a risk assessment, we will test on a periodic basis, a sample of them to make sure that they're occurring. And then the monitoring of progress, like I mentioned, the safety ones are updated on a weekly basis because we make weekly submissions to the FDA. Summaries and then the internal reviews are posted on a monthly.
Just the question. Oh, I'm from DC. You literally just said that. I just totally forgot. I'm Clarence Sanders. I'm a member at large in Iraq, and I am from the DC.
Okay.
So, yeah, I live in Noma. Let me get off at the DuPont Circle stop. The question I have is there a running list? Because I think the idea that you mentioned about while we're working on the track work, there's also time to do all the other things that are going on in the station.
Right.
Is there a running list available to the public or even within WMATA itself? itself that lists all of the things that need to be done in a particular station so that people can see, or even for people to add in, the lights are out or something like that, things are in there, where in which you have an idea of this is the state of the work. Like, I think something like this is really helpful, but people are very individualistic in their types of usage.
Right.
Like, the stations I use most are NOMA and DuPont, and it's like,
right.
I could go in there and look at the whole thing, but when I go into DuPont, it looks like a Soviet station. Like, it's what's going on in there for those kind of spaces. But if there was, like, a list or seeing all this, like,
we are not that sophisticated yet.
I'm sorry.
We're not there. I'm not sure when we're going to get there. But clearly, if you see things, let us know. I mean, staff just hates it. So I'm a user of the system. I take Mark in, and but I make it a point of at least once every other week spending half a day writing the system. And staff know when I'm doing that because I'm on my email saying, okay, you know, what's happening here? Why are the platform lights not working? Again, in the grand scheme of things, it's not huge, but if you don't have people telling you this, how are we going to fix it and make it better? So I would encourage you to let us know, and we will incorporate that. But we don't have a comprehensive list of this.
How would someone let you know? What would be the best way to do it?
I think through the customer service folks. We have social media. There's you get it to the media folks, and this place will jump like crazy.
The rest of you could explain.
So
to me
Joy,
what that is.
I mean, what would you?
We're getting into the social media.
No.
I'll tell you, my preference would be if you could identify a person in your department who the RAG members could communicate with via email, that would be helpful.
Yeah.
I mean, let's skip
a step. We'll get
back
to you on that.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks. Yep. I'll do that.
Right. That's a downside. We just don't have that feedback yet.
I did have a thought because you guys met Scott, the director of customer service, and you have his email.
Yeah.
Scott definitely is in his bailiwick. That is what he does. He can count it. Okay, so definitely Scott is
in. I checked it.
Yeah, I'll check
with
her again, but I definitely think they'll want to keep it in the customer service department because that still has to be tracked. It's still part of the customer sending in information. So we cannot go outside of that channel. So it will be somebody in that department for sure. And Scott is at the top, so I don't know how much higher you want to go.
I'm not sure if we have to buy by the same
Colin?
Yeah, well, I just want to say thank you for this presentation.
Okay.
I think this is the kind of thing that inspires confidence among riders, in a system
Good.
That's facing a crisis of confidence. So, thank you for your candor and being willing to share this information with us. And I guess a little bit to Clarence's point on sort of transparency and accountability, in terms of setting rider expectations, what may be helpful is to the degree possible, posting the policies and procedures that are on the books so that riders know, these are the things that a station manager ought to be doing, and if they're not doing it for me, then I know that I can, contact WMATA about that. And the same goes for, any number of things, but we as writers, I think, often sort of silently harbor resentment, and we aren't really sure, you know, if this is the kind of thing that ought to be, you know, done on a daily basis, or this is just the kind of thing that bugs me personally. But if there is a, you know, a degree of transparency in what the expectations are for the system, I think that would be helpful. And then just a bit of a follow-up, I wonder if you can expand on kind of the verification process for some of these, you know, corrective actions, especially as they relate to, you know, like major safety issues like tunnel ventilation. You know, how do you go about like verifying that, you know, something as critical as that system has been, you know, that the corrective actions have been taken at the, and that they continue to be maintained in a proper manner?
All right. So actually the first three that we did, tunnel ventilation was one, given the problems that we had before. So they went and reviewed, they do a review of all the documentation, policies, and procedures. Then they interview the staff. They go out and actually, you know, follow, unannounced, follow staff who are doing theirs. And then we go back in and we have a work order system. And we go back and they did a large sample given the potential problems in that area and verified the work was actually done. So it's pretty extensive. We're used to the FDA wanting us to send them gobs and gobs of detail. So we're using that same approach on our internal reviews so that we can give the general manager a reasonable assurance that things are occurring like they say they do. Also, just because human nature, that's why we're going back and periodically doing, you know, random samples, unannounced, you know, just show up, you know, call up. Now, it happens to be that we have a good relationship with plant folks, but again, I still want to have that verify. It's sort of the trust and verify approach to things, which I think is absolutely critical. Hopefully that answered your question.
It was out of curiosity, you had in one of your previous slides, there was something called LOTOs, lockout.
Tagout.
Tagout.
Yes.
Could you specify or could you give us an example of what falls within that category?
Okay, so this is has to do with electricity. So essentially, before you work on anything, you go through a very detailed process to make sure that the electricity is turned off. They refer to it as lockout, tagout. So you shut off the breaker, you tag it, make sure that it cannot be inadvertently put back on. If you recall, unfortunately, we had an incident last month where we did the lockout, tagout, and somebody inadvertently thought that it stopped at this point, went this far, but only went. The work area was essentially, in general terms, here. That was what was specified. The electricians came and made sure that the electricity was off for that period of time. For whatever reason, it was a human error. The individuals thought that it extended to this area. They went into this area and inadvertently got shocked. Now, thank God it wasn't hugely significant, but it was a problem. And so now what we've done is gone back and reviewed our lockout, tagout, another level of improvement into that.
Yeah. My name is Cesar Goffard. Yes. I'm from, I represent DC.
Okay.
Obviously, thank you for being here. I want to echo what Colin said and say that your presentation has been incredibly thorough and helpful and educational in helping us understand what happens behind the scenes at WMATA and keeping them accountable. Speaking about accountability, so my question has to do with, I think a large part of accountability is being able to enforce that and hold people accountable and make sure that they are following the sort of steps and procedures that you lay out in, you know, all of these action plans or reports. When you go in and you find that steps haven't been taken, that the, you know, safety improvements haven't been carried out, what is your office prepared to do? What have they done in the past to actually hold people and hold offices accountable at WMATA?
So obviously, if it's an immediate safety issue, we either deal with it, you know, contact the office director with the safety involved. If it's in terms of have we found anything that was so bad? Has my group found something that's so bad that it resulted in terminations? No. But I think if you all recall, earlier this year, we let a third of our track inspectors go. That was, my staff didn't do that. We brought in an outside expert to go through and review all the stuff. So that is occurring. I'm trying to think. I'm not aware of anything that our review that suggested that anyone needed to lose their job. I am aware of several ones where employees have been disciplined for functions. So at the end of the day, the boss is like, you got to do your job. And if you don't do your job, you're going to be held accountable. And I think the results are bearing it. I mean, I looked at the numbers. And you can slice and dice it however you want. Numbers. Last month, we terminated 33 employees, and that's throughout the organization. That's management, that's Local 2, that's, you know, Local 689 Operation Camps. That's a pretty significant. It was attendance, it was performance, it was safety related, it was, you know, a whole host of stuff. Last month was a little heavy, but for the last 6 months, it's been roughly 22 employees a month. I would like to get to a point where we're not doing that. Unfortunately, I don't feel our culture is where our employees are expected to perform every day. Everybody makes a mistake, and you know, there's certain mistakes that you just have to, that are so heinous. Okay, I get that. But you know, being terminated because you don't show up to work, that's a problem. You know, and I think last month it was nine employees. So it's a cultural thing. So, you know, we don't publicize it very much, but there is a lot of that going on. Roughly, it's about 20, the last 6 months. I just looked at the data yesterday. It's average is 22, and it's across the board. You know, the unions always want to say it's just the unions. No, if you read the papers, we're doing, part of the problem is us as managers. You know, we're not establishing high enough expectations. We're not giving good direction. When that occurs, then the managers have to be held accountable. So hopefully that answers your question.
In Montgomery County, thank you for your presentation. It has been really, really appreciated. So I want to ask a question, kind of like a follow-up regarding the Fort Totten shutdown right now.
Okay.
I'm experiencing it, and I have to say I can't complain that much. I'm grateful for all the, you know, the folks that are guiding me through my journey, and I want to know about who those people are. I think I have seen amazing examples of how those people have helped. You know, are they temporary workers? They're along your footpath, and they're guiding you where you need to go. Some of them are like miracle workers, making this an easier trek, and some of them make a mistake, and 15 people walk with a horrible experience from Metro, and it ruins their day, and they're just talking about how it's so unreliable, the people are not trained, they're getting them on the wrong bus, etc. I'd like to know about the training procedures for the people that come in for this and other Safe Track.
I'm going to say that other than the shuttle operators, who are a private contractor, I think I saw one or two purple vest people out there. Purple vests are retirees. When I was out there, 90% of the folks were WMATA employees. I have to say, as I thought, the service that we provided at Silver Spring, now I was late peak yesterday. Station managers were out of their kiosks. They were answering questions. They were proactive. You know, you had a couple people, and at Silver Spring, where you pick up the buses on the top of the hill, and where they drop you off is another location. So you had people getting off, and they looked confused. Well, those station managers did not ask. They didn't wait to be asked. They said, can we help you? I can't tell you how little those few words make a huge difference to a customer. we walked up, it's a little bit of a hill, but there were two bus service supervisors there that were making sure that other than this issue where we didn't, you know, properly change the sign, they were working that crowd. You know, they were asking questions, making sure, you know, they were announcing verbally, this bus expressed to Fort Totten and this one local to, you know, whatnot. So I think in that regard, it was pretty good. We learned a lot from SafeTrack. Personally, my own opinion was I was very disappointed in the service that we provided at Fort Totten. I didn't see the same level of station managers interaction with the employees. We had a ton of staff, and I hate when we have a ton of staff, because when you have a ton of staff, everybody's like, oh, he's going to do it or she's going to do it. I felt like, I apologize for my inappropriateness, one of our standards is, who's the daddy? Who's in charge? I didn't feel at Fort Totten that I knew who was in charge. I'm not sure who was in charge in Silver Spring, but that was working really well. And so that one of the things that we're trying to do is a after-action report. You know, and typically what we've in the past done is, okay, what worked and didn't work from an operational perspective? What I want to do is what worked and didn't work from a customer experience perspective. You know, certain things, you know, that we knew we were going to have problems the first day, and we had major problems the first day. And some of it was, you know, we had an accident, and so Silver Spring got backed up. Well, where we come from, you should have had a contingency plan with a contractor that says, okay, here's your primary route out of the station. If that, for whatever reason, gets blocked up, what's your backup? Well, we didn't have that. So those are the types of things that we want to try and do. I hate to say it, that sometimes the best training is bad experience and then sitting back and figuring out what you need to do differently. And so one of the things that I would like to try and do is an after-action report from a customer service perspective. Okay?
So I think I'm going to – no last questions, right? Valerie, can
sorry
you –
sorry I'm picking up so much.
No, that's okay. I think it's useful. Can you make it fairly quick?
Say something. Okay. And there have been some experiences where there was at Federal Center Southwest, I hope it's on some work order someplace, where there was a little dripping area. There's a lot of construction in that area. The next day, there's a bigger dripping area. And the next day, there's a dumpster with water coming in. And I go up and I say, hey, what's happening? And the station manager said, I'm here as a substitute. I don't know. And I said, well, does anyone else know? Some gentleman who seemed to be doing, like, custodial work came up to me and said, hey, if you can do anything about that, that'd be great. Well, it's something related to their cooling system. So
the federal cell?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that you need to have that fixed before it gets hot again.
Right.
But the point is that if I knew that if I see something is – you know, should I say something every time to the station manager? Should I say, hey, you've got a light out there? I'd like to be able to do that. I think as a Metro rider, I should have all my lights on. You know?
Right, yes.
So
one of the things that we did determine during the review process as it relates to station managers was we really didn't have a great way of tracking work orders. Let's be honest. We have some really good station managers, and we have some probably not so great ones. I'd like to think that we're making progress in getting better ones. But what we found was the tracking mechanism for problems wasn't really well defined. Even if you had a station manager who was proactive and wanted to put it, so what we're trying to do is to create a simplified process for them to report it, and then to track it, and then resolve it.
Right.
So we're not there, but I will follow up on the Federal South, because...
And the way that I eventually was able to problem solve this, I sent an email to Joy.
Yes. Yes. He takes care of everything.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thanks for coming. Okay. I just want to sort of add one thing. It is, I think, from the comments here, that what is the set, and I know your intentions are to follow up.
Yes.
But in many cases, I think from the perspective of the kinds of things that this committee is concerned about, a lot of it has to do with the culture of customer service, and that's a cultural problem, my opinion. And, you know, and there are some people who go, hey, I'm just going to wait these guys out. So, you know, I'm going to wait out. We've seen general managers come and seen general managers go. I want to wait them out. But I just urge you to follow up and to hold, if not the individual employee, hold the manager accountable. Because if the, you know, if your recommendation is that, it's my favorite one, but if your concern is that the station managers are in their kiosks when they're supposed to be out, I think that part of your other recommendation should be that there are periodic managers periodically visit stations.
Correct.
To see if this is a problem. Absolutely. And if it continues to be a problem in, you know, the supervisor has responsibility for the area between, you know, Farragut North and Shady Grove, that's where the problem is. Well, those kinds of people do need to be held responsible, and I hope you figure out a way to do that.
Okay, no.
I mean, otherwise, the most important thing that Paul has going for him is he has a lot of credibility.
Right.
With the three jurisdictions, with the board, that credibility is based on getting things done and following through. And safety is his mantra. I understand that, but at some point, people want more than safe. They want to sit, you know, they go, you know, we've been around for 2 years, whatever it is, it's time, you know, other things should be taken care of. The train should run on time. The staff should be nice to us. Whatever it is.
Yeah.
We have to
absolutely
arrive at a point where that just really is important.
Yeah, I agree with you. Just providing services. Not enough. In my mind, we need to look at it from a customer experience.
It shouldn't make any difference whether you have to get on the train at Silver Spring or Tacoma Park when they're doing the work.
Correct.
Over there.
Yes.
You should receive identical service, because that's
absolutely
a good organization.
Yes.
Does that. Thank you so much
okay,
for coming.
Thank you so much. Enjoy your
evening. We'll look forward to figuring out a way that we can communicate with you.
Okay.
Or I can communicate with you. Nobody else. Wait a minute, just agrees with
you. Or,
yeah, thank you, ma'am.
Have
okay.
Nice.
So. Joy, do we have any people who would like to make some public comments? Recognize one of the alumni of Lamina or Lemonade of
Pratt.
Hi, Chris.
What?
Okay. Approval of past meeting minutes. Anybody have any corrections, additions, substitutions? Yes, Deborah.
Yeah, Deborah. Just a friendly correction. It shows that I was the co-presider. I was not. It shows I was there. I was not. I was absent. So just, we can fix that. That'd be great. Thanks.
Okay. Anything else? Okay. Unless I hear any objections, let's consider the minutes approved. Chair's report. Well, as you can see, the chair is not here. But the chair report is attached to the document. Anybody see anything there that you'd like to discuss? Okay. Hearing nothing? Oh, yes, of course. Will.
So was there anybody that actually did get a chance to go meet with Ray LaHood?
I'm sorry?
Was there anyone that actually went to meet with Ray LaHood? You did? All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, and maybe as part of your committee report,
sure.
You can talk about that. Would that be helpful?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anything else in the... Okay. So let's move to the first committee report, safety and security.
I know. Spoil with me. Great. So the Safety and Security Committee met last month, and we discussed the bulk of the discussion was about the November 5th Van Dorn safety exercise. We had, I believe, 4 RAC members present at it, which was really great. And that conversation kind of turned into a larger discussion about station exercises and whether or not those will be planned, especially around evacuation routes and signage, and how often are they checked to make sure that they have the proper signage in the event of an emergency. And so we had kind of a larger discussion around that as well. The feedback of the participants and even the committee were submitted directly to the exercise coordinator, Lauren, and we'll have a follow-up call, or I'll have a follow-up call with her to discuss it over the phone. But we did submit our formal kind of feedback on it. Overall, I guess we haven't had a RAC meeting since it happened, right? Yeah. Okay. It was very early on in November. Overall, it went very smoothly. I definitely saw improvements over the last couple exercises, which is great, especially around the walking wounded and the triage and how that whole process you actually felt from the moment you left the train or disembarked the train all the way through to when you were determined to be let free. That whole process was very, very well defined, even to the point where you would be put on a bus and then taken somewhere. We actually got on the bus, but weren't taken anywhere, but that at least came all the way through. So it was really great to see that. They also had their local CERT team do make up for injuries, which kind of added to the real-ish nature of the exercise and was definitely appreciated by the participants. So we did see some jurisdictional differences as well, right? They were doing the exercises in the different jurisdictions, and so, for example, the first responders are going to be different and might have different ways of handling those situations. So something I'd like to focus on with Lauren during our call is how are they sharing between the jurisdictions, and since this is the final one for the year, is there going to be kind of a whole, like, look at the whole thing, and then how is that process going to, knowledge management, essentially, of the process? And then just kind of pick her brain, what will be happening for the next year? Are they going to stick with a rail incident? Will they move to buses, a station plus the bus bay? There's a lot of different ways they could take it, so I'd be interested if they're thinking in those aspects as well. So the other thing we did was we finalized our responses to the questions that arose during the joint WMATA board counterpart committee, previously the safety committee, and now it's rearranged, but that committee and us, there were some questions that arose from the meeting that we said that we would give them a public perspective on, essentially just on general, is the system safer? And so we kind of teased it out, the pros and the cons, and kind of added some context for them. And those were formally submitted as well. And they received a positive feedback. And so they looked forward to continuing that dialogue. Other than that, if you are not aware, this is my last RAC meeting. So I will be, I've already submitted to the committee a high-level work plan on what to anticipate next year that they can take forward or decide to change. It's up to them. But just so we can continue to have this good relationship with our counterpart committees and to continue that forward, I want to make sure that that's seamless even with my departure as chair. So I submitted the memo upon making the decision to not reapply. I was actually only a 1-year term, which I've forgotten about, quite frankly. So I've submitted the memo, and I'll also submit more handover documents and some final thoughts to the committee to take forward. So, and for our December meeting, we're going to enjoy each other's company and celebrate the holidays and also kind of have a nice closeout to the year, recapping our progress and where they want to go next year. So that's us.
I just have one question for you. I think you should be encouraged to share the people who run the safety drills, not only share among jurisdictions, but share within jurisdictions, because there are only a limited number of first responders who ever, I would guess, who ever get a chance to participate in a drill, and there are thousands. I mean, in the big counties like Fairfax and Montgomery, and particularly, there are thousands of professional and volunteer firefighters and EMTs who may never see the inside of a metro tunnel during an emergency, who need to get a sense of what that's like. However, that being said, my son is in the middle of the Montgomery County Fire Academy, and the nice thing I saw was at the Fire Academy, there were three rail cars, old metro rail cars, they used for training, and I was pleasantly surprised by that. Anyway, I want to thank you for your service, and we're going to miss you a lot. You've been a great chair of that committee, so good luck in the future.
At least I know something to look forward to.
I understand where Joy's coming from about you submitting to customer service, but there's no direct connection knowing that, like, once I've done this, that there will be any follow-up going into that. And I think that just would go a long way to sort of encouraging the public sort of trust this, being like, they can at least see this is the time frame.
Okay. Thank you.
Sawyer, now, having attended all but I think three now, and the last two is because I was out of town for races that you have to register early in the year for those. So by the time the schedule came along for the exercises, of course, it was too late. But do you know what the game plan is for the future? I mean, are they still going to be doing more with different stations or what? I mean, I don't know how they were envisioning continuing on this, because it's like, well, you're in different jurisdictions, so how many times can you do it within the same, you know, area?
Yeah, so I don't know the answer to that. I do know that I had incorrectly informed people that it was a grant-funded kind of year exercise thing. It was actually not grant-funded. I'm not sure where I got that from. But it was not grant-funded. It was internally funded, which to me is actually a better indication that they will continue in the future, because I was worried if it was a year grant, then they might cease. So to know that it was internally motivated is great. I do know that they also have limited staff, though, that are actually coordinating the thing. So I will definitely check with Lauren and ask her if she even knows what dates or what types. I mean, I was saying earlier, like, they could go with bus bays, they could do buses, they could do stations, just stations. The hard thing with some of those, though, is to really get the feel is you need a lot of people, you know. And so if you're going to do an overcrowding of a station due to a track issue outside the station, to really test it, you would need a lot of volunteers. I was encouraged. I think this last one had one of the highest volunteer counts and of all of them, and people were very vocal and yelling at the poor. I'll definitely check, and obviously definitely encourage that. I think they were focusing a lot on track issues. This whole one has been a train stuck in a tunnel. This one was an outdoor one, but it was all about the actual train, the train car and the rail. So hopefully they'll expand, but I'll find out and I'll let you know.
Yeah, no, I wasn't concerned about it going mm-hmm. from rail to bus. It was mm-hmm. just a matter of wondering, you know, how much they could possibly do within one jurisdiction over years. Mm-hmm. I think this was your number three. I think it was three, but I don't remember. So anyway,
yeah.
Just let us know. Thanks.
Yeah, no, thank you.
I could try my best. Is this thing on?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Ed. Joe did circulate the issues, the questions that he had on a Google Doc related to the developer license agreement and terms of use. I don't know if anyone has any questions or anything to add to it, but I think those are going to be submitted to Lynn, right? And there's going to be a conversation between you and her, right?
About Twitter?
No, about I'm going to get to the Twitter in a minute, but the developer terms of use.
I see, and so they're working on.
Okay, they're working on. Okay. One thing worth noting, I just want to note this. I know that that Metro might be coming out with some of its own apps. It did come out with an app that's similar to DC Metro Hero, where they have the map and the trains kind of move on it. I don't know if they're going to be doing similar apps or other apps as well, but I just want everyone to know that that is available. I don't know if that's related to the license agreement, but they seem to be going on kind of at the same time. If anyone, just so people know that there is some activity going on that end. And if you have anything to add to the questions, Joy said that's done, but if you have any other questions, definitely email Joe or me. The other thing is the Twitter account. Now I go to Joy about the Twitter account.
No, help me. Now,
I'll do my best. Chris, you've been called out.
Or somehow we ended up with Facebook and not Twitter. And I just couldn't really rearticulate the sequence of events enough to give him the story, so I was hoping you guys could.
Okay. Originally, the issue was that Lynn did not want any member of the RAC putting anything out on either Facebook or Twitter or any social media. At that point, there was any social media because it could be misunderstood that it was WMATA's position, okay? So she refused to, you know, it was like, no, she was gung-ho, no. Then, like several years later, maybe three years later, mm-hmm. then they let us do the Facebook. Uh huh. Now the whole thing about Twitter, honestly, I don't know, because it was very specific that it was only Facebook.
Right.
So I didn't know what, you know, any status about any other social media mediums.
So I recall the last time that we had Lynn come to talk to us specifically about that was, you know, right as we had gotten sort of, you know, the nod to engage in social media from the board. She, you know, came to kind of talk about how her office could support us in doing so, recommended that we start with Facebook, which at the time was where, you know, our thinking was anyway. But there's been no official prohibition against us pursuing, you know, Facebook. So I think, you know, or I mean Twitter rather.
Okay.
So it's my understanding that, you know, whenever we felt ready to dive in, you know, dive into the deep end, so to speak, with Twitter, we were free to do so. I think we can double check, but as I recall, you know, ultimately the permission for us comes from the board, not from Lynn.
Right, exactly.
So
that's why I was a little confused. I didn't know if it was like a board thing. I just kind of remember it played out there, but because I wasn't there and I really didn't keep up, I just didn't know that.
Yeah, but
I think we ended up
giving much more involved.
I recall it was sort of tacit approval, you know. But so, and I know that Joe has secured a handle, but
I think so.
Might be another guy who has one he can give us.
But also, I think it's worth noting, though, if you're concerned about people thinking that we are WMATA, that does happen on the Facebook page, and I don't know how. Yeah, it's like we'll get one star, worst service ever. I'm like, we're just the writers' committee or the writers' council, you know. I guess they don't. Well, they did say we left them outside, so I don't know. Maybe they're our buses were late, I guess. But that is something worth noting that sometimes it does happen where people think we are Metro. Well, it seems like I don't do Twitter, I'm going to be honest. I don't even have a Twitter account. That's not what I don't have the time to do that. It seems like at least for now, Joe's going to take on a lot of that. But he does know. I mean, he's run Twitter accounts before, like for some rather large organizations. So he must know that you've got to be. It can be a full-time job, and. But I think I don't know if he wants to handle that for the entire duration. I always felt that, and I've talked to him in our meetings, that Joe, I know you're taking on a lot of the social media stuff, but it's probably a good idea that one person with one voice is making certain comments. And maybe if we had like a go-to person for that, it's kind of being de facto Joe, unfortunately. Not unfortunately, but you know, it's all falling on him. Because we all can't speak with one voice on any particular subject, but it just doesn't make sense if we all did try to do that and took on part responsibility. It just wouldn't sound right, I guess. It wouldn't be a cohesive message. I mean, I guess you can almost like live tweet some of that, but I mean, Twitter is so different because. You've been live tweeting all evening, Chris? Are you tweeting? What's that? I hope you're not writing Paul Meisner, that new idiot. Jeez.
Letting people know when meetings are.
I was just going to say at the last meeting that Joe came to, I think for the security committee or something, we were talking a little bit, and I think he is overwhelmed with the social media, but I think if we were to move forward with launching it and starting it, one of the suggestions that was discussed was drafting some of those types of tweets that can be reused and having, like, you know, one committee draft, you know, a host of them, and then a few people sign on to be one voice, but with sort of like a unified tone. And I really like that idea of just broadcasting what we're doing and how the community can get involved with communicating with us, because I think it manages expectations. I've tried to manage social media for nonprofit organizations. It's not possible if you're not doing it full time. So if we manage the expectations and just make it about what we're doing, what that committee's working on, what that committee's working on, it allows people to know that we're not communicating regularly. We're giving updates about our tasks and letting them know they can. And I feel like those tweets could be managed, and I could help with that if we had, like, this is all we're doing, this is our low rollout, and then we move forward later if we have, you know, five other people that join that want to do social media.
So that sounds like a great idea that we could have, like, I hate to use the word canned, but sort of canned responses as to, like, if someone tweets something or another, you know, we could say, well, please come to our meeting, or if someone has a particular customer service issue, direct them to customer service, so, you know, some things like that. Of course, saying we're not Ramada, but, you know, we feel free to give us your criticisms and we'll take them up at our meeting, you know, things like that. So, yeah, definitely that's a really, really good idea. So, in other words, we're going to do like a Twitter, no Twitter wars, so in other words, the pre-Trump Twitter, not the post-Trump Twitter. Okay, got it.
Thank you.
would, I don't have a strong opinion either way yet. My only recommendation would be to choose someone as sort of well-connected and well-respected as Joy Wamata, because I feel like, Joy, you've been able to sort of connect us with basically anyone we've ever sort of wanted to speak to. And I don't necessarily know whether or not someone from the board secretary office would have that necessarily, but, you know, regardless of where they come from, I think that would be the most important trait that I see.
The only thing is that I honestly don't remember whose initiative it was to change from board secretary to customer service. I honestly don't know where that came from, if it was from the board or if it was from the board secretary's office that they didn't want to do it anymore and they wanted, you know, or who, you know. I'm trying to be, you know, I have no idea how this came about because, as I recall, it was a total surprise when they came out with that announcement. So I don't know if we have any input in that where, you know, where we should be going. But my only point is that just being with the customer service committee, I think that we were the customer city service committee was the ones that got the less responses from our request or you know, let's not say that we didn't get responses, but they were not exactly as complete as we would have liked.
Can you give an example of why that didn't happen?
So I think that's a good point. I think it makes sense for us to have a more formal relationship with the board than we currently have now. And if that means, you know, going back to, you know, a more direct report with the board secretary's office, I think that's great. I think the questions, you know, the outstanding question regardless is, you know, who is the liaison between us and WMATA? And so, you know, I'm with CETA. I don't really care one way or another whether it's somebody who sits outside of the agency altogether or if it's someone more like Joy who sits within the agency and is kind of, you know, assigned to, you know, to liaise on our behalf, so long as, you know, they're able to perform at least as well as Joy has. But I think, again, regardless of that, I think we should be seeking to more, you know, to more formally engage with the board, so that they feel like, you know, we're actually advising them, and we feel as though they value that advice, rather than kind of sending, you know, reports every few months to them and or recommendations every few months to them, and then kind of not really feeling like there's any real, you know, response. I think we've seen some improvements with individual board members, but. I think it warrants a conversation with some board members and potentially the board secretary's office.
Thank you.
whichever, you know, representative of the board, you know, we communicate this to, that you're moving forward, we want a relationship with WMATA where we don't receive no answers to questions that the GM and the, you know, the board themselves have, you know, have otherwise said yes to. You know, that's simply unacceptable, I think, is one thing. And, you know, that may be sort of a separate conversation, I don't know, but. I think the bylaws dictate that.
We've had a number of board members speak to us. Every one of them said they appreciate our feedback. I have a question. I've never asked them a question. What feedback specifically should try to transmit to you? Do you appreciate it? But I think that, you know, the closer we close our
So I'll give a few updates from the budget and finance side. So responding to your question, Will, we did ultimately have our meeting with Ray LaHood. It was a meeting, Pat was there too. It was a meeting probably attended by roughly 20 to 25 transit advocates, some union representatives, just a whole sort of a whole mix of people interested in transit and you know, part of different groups. I think the MW COG was there as well. And essentially, Ray LaHood sort of briefly outlined the report that he just put out, talked a little bit about dedicated funding and how he saw it as necessary but wanted to leave it up to the individual jurisdictions to decide sort of how they were going to raise that funding. He talked a lot about board reform, and so one of his sort of key ideas is replacing the board with this sort of five-member panel for the next few years, which is a little controversial. Talked a little bit about revenue and how he thought that bus fare should be raised to be brought in line with other systems. So he sort of outlined a few of those. He didn't give a lot more detail. And then it was mostly after that just sort of a listening session, you know, people expressing their opinions and feelings. Pat, do you have anything to add?
I was looking for more detail, actually.
A little bit, too.
I was looking for him to go through more of his recommendations, but they were pretty broadly based. I think the biggest one was having to do with what you mentioned, the size of the board, and wanted to make reforms in that area. But that is something we'd already heard before, so it wasn't really new.
Yeah, there wasn't that much new information. I think any of those recommendations should be publicly available now in the reports, but...
Yeah,
he didn't really share much.
The Twitterverse, they were not, well, a lot of them were not kind about his response. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. I think, and the takeaway from advocates who are expressing their opinions was that was trying to emphasize the point that WMATA and Metro are really a public good, you know, and that above all, sort of that mentality should be prioritized when we're making these discussions. And then, sort of apart from that, we've been working on over the past month or so. We've hit a little bit of a speed bump with regards to the retail survey that we're trying to put out. I think the customer research team is still having a little bit of personnel staffing issues.
Yes.
Yeah, so we're trying to work with them to try to get this survey up and running as fast as we can. But the most important thing, and I'll sort of hand it over to Paul right now, is a policy recommendation that we'd like to put forth.
Thanks, Sita. Maybe we could talk a little bit later, maybe offline, about the customer service with the survey. I'm of the belief that the sooner we get it out, the better.
Yeah.
And everyone wants to kind of put their fingerprint on it, so it just seems like let's just do it. But that's neither here nor there. You want to talk about the letter? Okay. I don't know if everyone had a chance to read the letter regarding the. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Sure, I can email. Oh, I could, but I can't do it right. I don't have it on my phone. The version that everybody. The version that I sent out this afternoon. Sita, do you have that? It's called like Catherine version 2. Can you just send it to everybody?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Paul, you ready?
Yeah,
do you want to?
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. It's 8:18. I get it. This came on. This wasn't really my idea. This actually came from an anonymous someone on like Metropocalypse, who said, "Hey, why with the new changes with the not being able to carry negative balances on your smart chip card, that we have machines behind the fare gates that allow use of credit cards and debit cards, kind of like how there are in front of the fare gates." I think it was a really, really good idea that person made that, and I said I'd like to run with that and at least bring it here. There are a couple of ideas that we could do, one of which is, let's go through the policy a little bit. As I don't know if everyone's read this, but a few weeks ago, actually the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, I believe, WMATA came out with a policy that negative balances will no longer be allowed on your smart chip card. So you, A, have to check your balance before you enter the system. B, link it to a – oh, cool. B, link your smart chip card to your bank account, which I don't know how many people have done that. Or C, carry cash on you if your smart chip balance is not sufficient for you to exit the system. Of course, there are a lot of negative possibilities here of people being trapped behind the gates, asking their fellow riders for money to get out of the system, or maybe becoming a permanent resident of Metro Rail. That's right. That's exactly right. And this kind of touches home for me personally, because I have ridden the rails with a negative balance from time to time, as I'm sure most people have, just because we don't know that it's negative. I understand WMATA's policy. I understand their direction on this. They basically have lost $25 million in the 17 years that we've had the smart chip system, and this is one way of plugging that hole and dealing with that shortfall. And I think at least one way to deal with this is having the ability to use your debit or credit card behind the fare gate, so you don't, like I said, become stuck inside the Metro Rail system. I personally don't know the software involved with that, because the exit fare machines do function slightly differently than the entry systems. And also, I don't know. Right. Those are cash only, but I don't know if you – I don't know if you could do that. That's what I'm getting at. I don't know if you could do that. So, and Catherine came up with that idea that can we just switch them out? And as Chris just pointed out, we don't have, there are no phone lines, no ability to do that. But if WMATA wants to do this policy change in not being able to carry negative balances, I understand that, but there's got to be some give back. There's got to be a switching, at least alternative, at least alternate the machines, maybe install some lines, at least at stations with high traffic, stations with a lot of visitors. When I go visit another city, I don't think in advance, hey, I have to hook their transit system to my bank account before I go ride New York subway or any other transit system. That's kind of asinine. That's exactly correct. But there are systems like BART where it is based on, like Metro, pay is based on how far you go in the system. So there are Metro Rail-like systems in the country, too, that figure this out. Right. So I don't know. Like I said, I don't know the cost of this, but there really has to be some give back here for the riders. And you saw the comments that somebody posted on the RAC's Facebook page where they tried something like that, and it turned into a real fiasco for her. So, yeah, we want to prevent that from happening too, definitely, Clarence.
Yeah. No, thank you, and just sort of a couple extra comments. I mean, at the end of the day, WMATA, it's inevitable, right, that they're going to be driving, whether they're tourists, whether they're people who just don't carry large balances on their cars. You know, to enter the system and realize that they don't have
enough money to exit the system. And what we're trying to recommend here is that just WMATA makes it easier for people to pay, you know, so that they can exit, so that there aren't, you know, large lines or lots of confusion when they're trying to exit, you know, so that they don't have to try to, you know, escape the system without paying, you know. We want to make it easier for WMATA to be able to institute their policy, you know.
I find this odd in that I can be on the WMATA on my Kindle, buy a book in the Metro system, but I can't pay a $5 fare? I mean, there's more than phone lines ways to communicate nowadays, and I believe the improvements to the platforms and being able to have software should make this an easier lift. So I don't think no phone lines in the places behind the gates is a reason in the 21st century.
I do really appreciate you guys drafting this letter. I think mentioning that it's going to disproportionately impact low-income riders is critical. It's definitely going to disproportionately affect people with disabilities and seniors. So that's one of the things I was hoping could be added to that sentence or perhaps an additional sentence. It is going to gravely impact seniors who live on fixed incomes and who, you know, anyway, so that. And then I also do think it's going to disproportionately impact enforcement on people of color. I mean, I'm concerned that right now I always go negative. I mean, for sure. And guess what? I just smile and the guy lets me go, put my money, and then they come back. I mean, it happens. But I know that if someone else asks that same thing, there's an argument. And I have seen so many people confront passengers who are $2 short, and I'm like, that didn't happen to me last week. Right. So I feel like if they're going to roll this out with 1 week's notice, like, I mean, like, they're implementing it next month, there's going to be a huge impact on people, and I feel like we need to stress that. I mean, how the enforcement takes place can really, really negatively impact
also, I mentioned in the
specific
letter,
populations.
Also, Rebecca, and I mentioned that in the letter, too, that what's going to happen, this puts a very onerous duty on some of your station managers, because basically they're not going to act as a bodyguard keeping people from exiting the system. If I want to exit the system, I'm going to find a way to, and that, I think that's really going to hurt your employees, obviously.
So, Colin had a point.
It's okay. Well, I agree with everything everyone said. I think this is a solution looking for a problem that's going to cause more problems than it will solve. But I just also want to go on record as saying, just pointing out the fact that neither board nor staff ever came to us to to let us know that this was coming down the pike. And just how absurd that is, if we are truly an advisory council to this organization, the fact that they would roll out a change like this, which I have to believe the board was well aware of in advance, and must have approved at some point, without ever seeking our input, which means that they're not seeking rider input. I think we can say, you know, in the future, the Riders Advisory Council would appreciate, you know, being consulted, or would appreciate the opportunity to advise the board on such policy changes.
I think it's really important.
Like, let's make sure we use that word they tried to take out of our mission statement.
Is it going to hit in 6 weeks? I mean, but right. I know, but I'm just saying that I do appreciate you guys drafting this, and I don't want to bogart or anything, but I do think it is a very dangerous policy, and if we were going to take any stance, I think it would be wonderful if we did come out and say, the RAC was not consulted, and we understand you guys need money, but this is going to create a lot of problems, especially with such a short amount of time notice. I mean, I always go negative, and then I pay it, you know, whatever. But the idea that they're going to tell me 2 weeks in advance when all these other problems are happening, it's just, yeah. Then you can't get in the next time.
So that what they do is they're going to let you through the get access gate.
That's okay.
And go add money by your credit card, come back in, and then exit through the fare gate, or, you know, you have to have cash to go to one of the two machines that are inside the gates.
Which is why it's going to be so difficult, because enforcement is going to really vary. Some station manager is going to say, yes, you can go there, and some station manager is going to say no. And it's just going to happen. And then, you know, the Metro Police have been heavily enforcing that other thing, and I've seen like 6 police takedowns in Chinatown in the last month, like heavily active. I mean, all against African-American men, and all by Metro Police. I mean, intense situation. So I'm very upset.
Well, I think, okay. one thing just for us all to just remember, everybody's saying things that are really good to know. But, you know, why didn't they consult the RAC? Why? I don't think they consulted anybody. I don't think we should take, you know, in other words, the Blue Line situation, they didn't look, you know, they don't look ahead. This is something that is a common problem with whether it's coming from staff or the board or they're not. They say, here's a problem, and instead of, you know, asking us, talking to things, giving some, they just whack them all, they do something, and then all the problems exist afterwards. So the letter is great, but I think we have to realize there's a culture in WMATA of making decisions prior to exploring the consequences of those decisions and what things need to be done ahead of time, so you don't just do that without, you know, making sure how are we going to enforce it? How are people who don't have internet access going to know? How they just don't seem to do that. So yes, they should have worked with us, but I think it's not just us. I don't think whoever made that decision, I don't think thought it all the way through, and that's what same thing with the Blue Line and other things that came up. Those were avoidable problems, and so what we have to do is figure out how do we fit into that without being combative. I think this letter is a first start on that. The same thing with the change on the local bus lines. Mm-hmm. They just made the change. They said, oh, we asked for input, but they gave people 2 weeks. And when I went to the meeting, Paul and I were there, I said, okay, this meeting was to get feedback from us on how this would impact us. I said, if something came forward that was, you know, legitimate, would it affect your decision? Or are you already rolling this plan out and it's happening in 2 weeks regardless? And they said, it's a done deal. We're rolling the plan out in 2 weeks regardless. Well, why are you having the meeting? So this is a cultural decision-making problem in WMATA that I don't think doesn't just involve us. I think it's a bigger picture.
what we've done in the past with this kind of thing is you know, made final edits, kind of get everyone's approval via email. Catherine says, you know, we're good to go, and she, you know, coordinates with Joy in you know,
and the
or whomever to
The other thing that should.
I know it's about 8:30, but I think Jennifer really brought up a good point about this, these sort of decisions not being made with writer. Do you know anything about how this came about? Or?
So the can we speak? Yeah. Okay. So you've got a board meeting coming up on the 14th, rescheduled from the 21st.
Okay, I just want to know.
So, yeah, thanks. Just real quick, because I know it's after 8:30. The board meeting has been rescheduled from the 21st to the 14th. There's no reason why this subject shouldn't come up at the board meeting, at a report that she gives to the board. Well, certainly, you know, you're going to have the full board there. You'll have, I don't know how well it will be attended. It did just get rescheduled from the 21st to the 14th, though.
We wanted to alert you to that. And finally, does anybody have any idea of any recommendations for speakers you'd like to hear in January? Is there anything that, you know, all these issues we talk about, is there anything that jumps out at you and says, we should hear from?
I think we should hear from the Inspector General. He's been in the newspaper. There's some real issues about the separateness of the Inspector General. There's actually, believe it or not, an association of Inspector Generals in Washington, D.C. And they have standards, and I'm not sure that WMATA meets all of those standards.
Yes. How about anybody interested? Do you think we have enough information about what Larry LaHood is proposing, or what do we think? Do you think we have enough information about what Ray LaHood is proposing, or we should let Ray LaHood here?
So I think that's a good idea. The other idea is there's a proposal among a number of Maryland delegates to reform WMATA in general, but one component of that is to alter the RAC, making it more independent. the way that RAC members are appointed, so that it's appointed by the jurisdictions rather than the board members themselves. Anyways.
Is that in the piece of legislation that was introduced?
I don't know if it was a piece of legislation so much as sort of a white paper, if you will. I looked at it for, you know, maybe a minute, but it may be worth having one or more of them come and tell us, you know, what their ideas are.
Yeah. Anyway, we got a list. Probably maybe can take us through the spring, right?
Yeah.
Anything else for the good of the order? Okay, motion to adjourn. Happy holidays, everyone.
Happy holidays.
We'll see you on January 3rd. Not before.